You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
10, 9, 8, 7, ignition sequence started. All engines are started. We have ignition, 2, 1, 0, we have a liftoff. We have a liftoff and it's lighting up the areas. It's just like daylight here at Kennedy Space Center as the second flight is moving off the pad. It is now clear of the tower.
Hello and welcome to the White Rocket Podcast, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with the Earth Station One Network. It's one long conversation with a variety of guests about the best of popular culture. I'm Van Allen Plexico. I'm joined again this week, as I was last week, by John Ringer. Welcome back aboard, John.
Thanks for having me, Van.
And John was on last week so we could talk about the entire Star Wars phenomenon up until Episode 7. On Friday, we're recording this on Sunday afternoon of the 20th of December. On Friday, my family and I went to see it, and I believe John has just come back from seeing it. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And we are ready to talk about it. So, I don't even know where to begin. I have about 4 pages of notes, but I don't know where to start. So, should we both just kind of maybe give it a grade, like a star grade or a letter grade or something before we get into it so that people know kind of where we're coming from or what? What do you think?
Well, I mean, let's start at a simple level. Okay. Were you happy, pleased, disappointed, unhappy, ecstatic?
Overall, I'm pleased and I'm happy. I have very definite concerns and hesitations. And I'm very torn about it. There's about probably 70% of me is happy and 30% is kind of unhappy. But you know what? Compared to the last 3 Star Wars movies, that's a grand slam walk-off home run, right?
That's fair.
So I'm as happy as I've been at least since 1983. What about you?
I would say that's fair. I really enjoyed it. It's much better than the prequels, but I do have some questions and some concerns we should talk about.
Yeah, and we're going to get through all of that here over the next hour or so. All right, so just in no particular order, I have lots of notes. I'm sure you have lots of things you want to say and talk about and chime in as well. But at the very beginning, I just have to mention this. I really missed the 20th Century Fox opening. It's become sort of like part of the credits of these movies, you know, it's almost like the gun barrel at the beginning of James Bond, even though it really has nothing to do with the movies. I know it's just, they were always 20th Century Fox movies. And so we've kind of associated a Star Wars movie. You know, I've talked with people about this before. The other people have said the same thing, that when they go see a movie that's from 20th Century Fox, you almost feel like you're at a Star Wars movie. If it's not even Star Wars, you know, when that beginning comes
up. When the logo comes up.
Yeah, yeah. So did you notice that it was gone, or were you even thinking about stuff like that?
I didn't notice. I was waiting for the scrolling text.
Yeah. Well, I just was sitting there going, are we going to have the Disney castle, or what are we going to have?
I wondered about that too.
And we had the Lucasfilm thing, but we didn't have the 20th Century Fox. So so that was just – it kind of wrong-footed me from the very beginning, but oh well, so what? So – okay. So yeah, like I said, this movie was much, much, much more fun than the prequels. The problem I have always had with the prequels, in addition to wooden acting, terrible dialogue, and the fact that the story was boxed in with a predetermined bad ending, right? I mean, there's nothing they can do. In addition to that, the prequels had no central hero. They had a central tragic character. And they had a number of supporting heroes, but there was no central hero to root for, particularly after Qui-Gon, you know, is dead at the end of the first one. Because Obi-Wan is more of a supporting character. He's not like the hero of the piece at all, and neither is Amidala.
That's fair.
So this movie, we got heroes. We got these cool, young, new good guys, along with several of the cool, old good guys. And we got a kind of some cool, new bad guys. But on the other hand, this kind of sums up my feeling about the whole movie. While we did have all that really neat new stuff, there's the good side and the dark side of it trying to be like the originals. The good side is that it felt like Star Wars, right? I mean, J.J. Abrams was absolutely right to use practical effects to paint wood, you know, instead of using mm-hmm. CGI. That absolutely paid off. It felt like a Star Wars movie for the first time since Return of the Jedi, I thought.
It really did.
But the dark side, if you'll pardon the pun of that, is that it really didn't try to do much original, you know? I mean, give the prequels this. For all the flaws the prequels had, they were trying to be different and original from the original trilogy. And this movie, to me, I'll throw it back to you, but here's how I sum it up. It really didn't try to do much of anything original. It tried to just say, here's some more, another helping of stuff you like. And I summed it up as, this movie to me felt like I watched the original trilogy, drank a bottle of tequila, fell asleep, and dreamed it.
It's fair, because it was like a weird, much later version of, Episode 4, New Hope.
Mm-hmm.
It really was like that in some ways, especially the plot. I mean, it was that movie 30 years later.
Yeah. With little pieces of the other two kind of thrown in.
Sure. And I think here's my overall impression. I really enjoyed it. It was fun. I thought, you know, every time an old character or something came on screen, everybody in the theater was, you know, applauding and happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that was great. And it was fun. It was funny. Mm-hmm. But the other feeling that was really weird is with the prequels, you knew where they were going. Like you knew the end of the story arc.
Yes.
And in this movie, like with these characters, I have no idea where they're going.
Right.
I have no idea what the relationships are going to be or who, you know, or where the whole thing is going. So that part, I thought it was almost a little unnerving. You know, it was like you're going down this mountainside of Star Wars and you're like, I'm used to knowing exactly where all the turns and everything are. And this one, I really have no idea. So that was a little bit scary and unsettling. And I mean, I enjoyed it, but I really enjoyed it. And I have some issues, too, with it. But it was a fun movie.
Well, let's see. I've got here's several different things. One thing I got to say up front, it was a very J.J. Abrams movie, right? I mean, it was
yes.
This was J.J. Abrams' Star Wars, and it, you know, in retrospect, if I'd thought about it a little more fully beforehand, but I was trying not to think about it at all. In fact, let me just go ahead and say, I somehow managed to avoid all spoilers for this movie. It's more like the first movie I've ever in my life managed to do that. I saw the original trailer a year ago. That really short one that just kind of had Kylo mm-hmm. Ren with his sword, you know, and mm-hmm. BB-8 rolling and,
yep.
and, you know, the dark side and the light. That's the only thing I'd seen other than stuff on the shelf at Target. Mm-hmm. So I didn't know anything, and that was great. I really got to enjoy it knowing absolutely nothing about the characters or who was good or bad or what. But, yeah, I should have known that it – just from having it be J.J. Abrams, I should have known that it would have lots of really big, cool scenes that don't necessarily make perfect logical sense in the grand scheme of things.
Yes.
Because that's always been one of his bugaboos. He is very good at imitating other directors, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he also is not so good at making all the connections connect.
That's fair.
So, you know, this movie felt like George Lucas 1977, but the difference is the 1977 Star Wars, pretty much everything made sense. That you went from A to B to C to D. It was a very linear movie, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You followed the MacGuffin of the plans of the Death Star. You know, you go from Princess Leia's ship to the droids on Tatooine to Luke to Ben to Han Solo and Chewbacca to Mos Eisley to Alderaan to the Death Star to Yavin to the end. I mean, it was a very linear movie. Mm-hmm. Whereas this movie was kind of all over the place in a way, even though we had the same MacGuffin again to some degree, although it was a different one. So here's some of the similarities. You had everybody chasing a hidden file that's inside a droid on a desert planet.
Yes.
You have the main hero grows up on a desert planet, but it's a different big barren desert planet.
Mm-hmm. They're everywhere.
You have a hero in stormtrooper armor, though for a different reason this time, which was cool. Mm-hmm. You have a planet-sized bad guy gun that's attacked by X-Wings. And also a Han Solo has to go and turn off a shield generator again. You have a villain in black with a mask and a funny voice. And you have a cantina with aliens in practical effect makeup. And that's not bad. I mean, I'm not saying, how horrible.
And a good guy gets captured and has to escape from Imperial custody.
Yep. And they have to use the force as the voice, you know, these are not the droids you're looking for. Let me go. Yeah, there was so much in it that you had an interesting villain in a different armored uniform that never really does anything. And yes. That's the silver stormtrooper, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many things. It's crazy. And here's a funny statistic that I didn't make this up. I got the calculator out and got it. What percentage of all the big Star Wars movies to date have involved blowing up a giant thing that's supposed to blow up planets?
More than half.
42.8%. 42.8% of all Star Wars movies have involved blowing up a giant thing that blows up planets. And they've succeeded all three times. So before we move into some specifics, I just named those similarities. Was that a good thing or a bad thing?
In some ways, it was a good thing, I think. I mean, I think it kind of grounded everybody that we know what's happening here.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I think if they had gone in a completely different direction and done a bunch of stuff that wasn't connected to any of that, I think people would have been really lost, and it would have just seemed like a random space saga thing.
Yeah. That may be, yeah.
But the other part is, my one thing I want to be critical of the movie on is the so much similarity to Episode 4 in terms of the big plot with the we don't need another gun that destroys planets. I mean, it's been done. We got it. And especially a gun that destroys planets that's vulnerable to attack by small fighters.
Yeah.
At some point, let's learn the lesson. And
well, yeah. Well, even beyond that, I mean, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, I got an email from Will Collier, who did a segment on our show last time when we were talking about the Star Wars phenomenon, and he called it the Star Sucker. And now, I did think it was neat they called it the Star Killer, which was a nod to the original name of Luke Skywalker's family. They were originally, he was Luke Star Killer. So that was a nice little homage there. But it made so little sense. And again, we're going to talk about the good, and we liked it on balance, I think, both of us, more than we didn't like it, right?
Yes.
So we're going to talk about the good, and I really want to talk about the characters, good and bad. We're going to talk about the good, but just one more nitpick while you brought up the big gun, okay? It didn't make a lick of sense. I mean, I kept thinking I must have been missing something somewhere because it's a planet, right? Mm-hmm. It's not a giant space station that can go places. It's a planet that eats its own sun. So if you're Jupiter and you're mad at Saturn, so you eat the sun and blow up Saturn. Now you're Jupiter in the dark with no sun. What am I missing there?
Well, not just that. It's eating its own sun and then shooting a beam that is apparently traveling it, through hyperspace to hit these other planets that are in another solar system.
Well, that's what I was wondering. Was it shooting at planets in other solar systems or just?
Oh,
other?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. But that was never really clear.
No.
They didn't really make the whole thing clear. You just had to kind of go with it and just figure that it was whatever it was. Okay. All right. Well, that aside, now I want to talk about the main characters a little bit, because I think that the strength of this movie, other than just sort of the way it was put together to feel Star Wars-y again in a way that the prequels just didn't for a number of reasons, the time and place setting as well as the, they were supposed to be a different age, and that's fine. But this felt like that used past its prime Roman Empire in decline, Star Wars universe that we remember from the 70s and 80s. And and I think besides that, the real strength of this movie was the main characters and the new characters. Which of the new characters did you like the best and why?
I mean, Finn and Rey are the two main characters that, that I thought were really good. I thought, Finn's transformation from stormtrooper to good guy made sense. You see it happen. You see him refuse to shoot the villagers and see his buddy die and get blood on him, and you see him decide that he's going to have to go through like reprogramming and he wants to escape. And so that makes sense, because he's not a clone. He's just a conscript. And I thought, you know, Rey is an interesting character, grew up on the desert planet, and you know, apparently not too long in the movie figure out she can use the Force. So you wonder who she is and stuff, and how she's been abandoned on her planet by, you know, relatives, or somebody. Mm-hmm. And, but also at the same time, she, you know, gets fed up at certain points and decides to head off. But I thought she was a really good character. I thought she was a very strong character, and I liked that. She was capable of taking care of herself. And I liked that she, she was self-reliant, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, let's talk about those two for just a second before we get into the others. They're obviously the two protagonists. There's, mm-hmm. I mean, we had Han Solo back. We had Chewie, and I'm looking forward to Chewie getting the Best Supporting Actor Oscar for this, because I thought he was awesome in this. I actually thought Chewie was better in this movie than he was in the original trilogy.
In Empire Strikes Back, he has some good moments, but definitely there was some moments in here we kind of gave Han the look and that kind of stuff that were just grade A.
Oh yeah, Chewie got to be funny. He got to give some looks. He got to react to stuff. I mean, he even got to let Han borrow his bowcaster. I mean, there were just a lot of. This was a very good Chewbacca movie, and he didn't get killed, so he'll be around some more. That's kind of cool, because I think in the old version, in the expanded universe, whatever, he died fairly early on, which was a stupid idea by the publishers to take one of the best characters out of the story that early. So I'm glad they brought him back. I kind of suspected that Han was going to, you know, get whacked there, and that didn't surprise me at all. But yeah, speaking of Finn and Rey, let me address each one of them. Rey, she was interesting, but I feel like her story is really yet to be told. The actress was great. The character's interesting. It's empowering to women. That's awesome. But in terms of really getting to know her and everything, we didn't get a lot in this movie. She did a lot of stuff, but we didn't get to know her.
We don't learn a lot about her.
So I feel like the next movie, she's really going to be the central character. And hopefully now that she's, you know, hooked up with Luke at the end. And by the way, if you hadn't figured out by now, I'll go back and put a spoiler warning. We're going to totally dig into the whole movie. So you're in deep trouble if you haven't seen it yet and you're listening to us. But yeah, at the very last scene when she tracks down Ayatollah Luke Maney, that's what I thought of him.
No, he's Ben. He's like Ben Kenobi.
He is totally Ben. I know. I feel like in the next movie, they will be like Ben Kenobi and Luke, you know. And I feel like that probably Luke will be in about as much of episode 8 as Kenobi was in episode 4.
Mm-hmm.
Teaching, right? But apparently she's already been taught a little bit, because she sure didn't seem to know what she was doing. Anyway, so she was interesting. She didn't, she did a lot of stuff, but we didn't learn a lot about her. I think there's more to come. I have no problem with that. You know, the original trilogy was very big on leaving lots of cliffhangers and mysteries to resolve in the next movie. You know, we didn't know who Darth Vader was after the first movie. We didn't really know a lot about Luke, honestly, or Leia or anything like that. We had to learn it all over the course of 5 and 6. So that's fine. But yeah, Finn, I thought, was absolutely the best thing about this movie, because he was a completely original character that we had never had a stormtrooper change sides. We'd never even really had a legit stormtrooper take his helmet off before.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they were all clones.
Right.
Theoretically.
They were trying to do the old recruiting or enslaving rather than using clones. And it backfired, because you actually get individuals now.
Uh-huh.
And I thought that was very, very interesting. I really liked the idea of a stormtrooper that just thinks the whole thing is stupid and changes sides. And you got to think though, in the future though, if there's a important mission to send Finn on, remember he's a stormtrooper, so he can't shoot straight. He's not going to hit anything when he shoots. Make sure send somebody to help him shoot, unless he trains. Yeah, I thought he was the best new character and really interesting, and I'm looking forward to more of him. He got fleshed out a lot more in this movie than she did, I thought.
Yes.
Now, Now, before we get to Kylo Ren, the other new hero is Poe Dameron, and I didn't feel like we got enough of him to really get a read much. He's the dashing Han Solo-ish pilot, but beyond that,
Yeah, no, we didn't learn that much about him.
We don't know anything about him as a character.
Capable, he's a pilot. He gave up his jacket.
Yeah. About it. Because he had to, otherwise, Finn is running around in his stormtrooper leotard.
That's it.
His stormtrooper pajamas, which anybody would have looked at and gone, aren't you wearing like the stormtrooper, inside? It's like if you defected from the Confederacy and you're running around in gray. people are going to know, you're wearing gray there, pal. What's up with that? That's like on Firefly when Mal goes into the bar and he's wearing that brown coat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, yeah, he had to be covered up with something. Now, Kylo Ren, before I say anything to prejudice it, how did you react? What did you think about Kylo Ren?
Well, I mean, you don't know who he is at the beginning of the movie. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, at some, some point you're supposed to suspect it's Luke, and I did. Yeah. But once he started killing people, whatever, that didn't really make any sense. So then you're like, who the heck is this guy? Because he can clearly use the Force. Mm-hmm. And then when they said he was Han and Leia's son, that made a lot of sense.
It was sad and depressing in a way. You're like, after everything they learned from the original trilogy, they still screwed up. In fact, I was just talking to Jim Yelton on his show. And Jim makes the point, he was going down the list. He's like, Yoda's Padawan was what's his name in Attack of the Clones?
Dooku.
Yeah, and he goes to the dark side, and then Ben's Padawan is Anakin, and he goes to the dark side, and apparently Luke's Padawan was Kylo Ren, Ben Solo, and he goes to the dark side. We're like, the only Jedi who ever had things go right was Qui-Gon Jinn.
Again, why he was the best. He had Mace Windu.
He was they were the only ones that didn't have their disciples go to the dark side. And
well, it's funny, Anakin's Padawan didn't, but that's a Clone Wars thing. So,
oh, okay, I haven't seen that.
So. You have to watch those.
Well, that's ironic. of all the people who don't,
but it's like bad parenting and bad mentoring.
Yeah,
comes back to bite you.
Yeah, Kylo Ren. I mean. The interesting thing was he was very adolescent. I was fascinated when he started throwing tantrums with his lightsaber. Mm-hmm. But as we figure out who he is and how young he is and his whole character, it started making a lot more sense. I mean, he's basically a rebellious teenager who wants to rebel and go be with the cool kids on the dark side. But he keeps getting pulled back over by the light side and he can't quite get away. It's like the exact opposite. That's so fascinating. He's like the exact opposite of Anakin. Anakin, mm-hmm. Anakin had everything in front of him to be a good guy, but he kept getting seduced by the dark side. And Kylo Ren is getting pulled over by the dark side, and yet he can't quite get away from he's getting seduced by the light side. So it's interesting.
Interesting, and I thought we may see kind of a reverse Darth Vader thing with him, but.
Yeah,
where he comes over the light side and fights on the light side.
And fight, yeah, right. Rather than just redeeming himself at the end, it's going to be.
Although it'll take a lot after that Han Solo thing.
Yeah, it would take a lot, right? And he knows he pretty much can't be redeemed, but he can at least try to make up maybe for some of the things. But I was thinking that he basically for about most of the movie, Kylo Ren is basically Anakin at the position he was about four-fifths of the way through episode 3, when he's mm-hmm. he's gone over to the dark side, but he hadn't got his Darth Vader outfit yet. That's kind of who he was. But yet he doesn't seem completely convinced. And he's not a complete fighter. He barely holds his own against Finn. And then he really gets his butt handed to him by Rey, who had theoretically never picked a lightsaber up before, although again there's questions there, but I thought that he was a very interesting character, and
but I want to say in terms of him and the other, I thought one of the other major weaknesses of the movie was the villains. I thought while they were cool, Captain Phasma, the head general guy, and then like whoever the supreme leader guy, none of them I thought were as intimidating or scary as like in the original movie, like Darth Vader and Grand Moff Tarkin were.
Not even close. Not even close. Well, that's the thing, is that Kylo Ren was, and that is how it's different, and I appreciate it for that, is that Kylo Ren is interesting in that he's not like anybody in the original trilogy. He's much more like Anakin, maybe circa episode 3.
Mm-hmm.
But even then, that's not a leading villain level of evil. You know, that's like the evil apprentice level.
Yeah.
We didn't really get a villain. It's funny, the prequels didn't have a hero, and this movie didn't really have a top shelf malevolent villain, although at the end you get the sense that he could become that.
Mm-hmm.
But he's still kind of wrestling with it. We don't know anything about the guy that Andy Serkis played that was the hologram.
Yeah.
Well, I don't even remember what his name was, but
it's like Smoke or Snoke or
Snoke, something like that. Yeah. We don't have any idea who that was. Was he a Sith Lord? Was he how big? I mean, I have to suspect that he's actually about Yoda size, and the hologram was making him look huge, right?
Mm-hmm.
I thought, you know, I was thinking this was like a giant that they brought in, a character that was a villain that was going to be like 30 feet, 40 feet tall. And then when I realized it's a hologram, I'm like, okay. So he has vanity issues. See, he's compensating for something by making his hologram gigantic. So he's probably about Yoda size, you know, and that's how Andy Serkis will play him, like Gollum, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. But, did you get any sense of who that's supposed to be or where he came from? Or
we had the discussion in the car the way back to the theater. It's supposed to be like Darth Plagueis. That is the Sith Lord who trained Palpatine.
Oh. Well, now I was wondering who Palpatine's mentor was.
Right. He mentions a story about a guy named Darth Plagueis who he supposedly killed, but Plagueis was a guy who had avoided death numerous times, whatever. So that's a theory. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll definitely see. Yeah, so that's fine. Again, I don't have any problem with leaving these mysteries for the next movie, particularly when you realize the next movie is less than 18 months away and not 3 years. You know, I've been saying these kids today, they don't know how good they have it.
Is it in the summer?
Yeah, we had to wait 3 years. The next one's coming out. Episode 8 comes out in the summer of 17.
Wow.
So we don't have hardly. Look at this. We're going to get another Star Wars movie in a year.
Mm-hmm. Rogue One, whatever that is.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for my Boba Fett romantic comedy. I think I'm waiting in vain, but you got to think they're going to give Boba Fett his movie. But yeah, in a year we get the Rogue One thing, which actually is set back before Episode 4,
mm-hmm.
and then in 6 months after that we get Episode 8. So they're going to be bombarding us with new Star Wars stuff. In a way that George Lucas never conceived of doing. Let's see. We've gone through a bunch of my list here, but I'm going to throw a few other things out here and we can talk about. The Republic and the Resistance were kind of the same, but not the same. And if the Republic is the Republic and is the government, then how is the army fighting for it, the Resistance? That was never quite clear to me. What did you make of that?
Yeah, that doesn't make a lot of sense. At some point, like in every insurgency, at some point you have the upper hand and then you form a government and then your army isn't the insurgent anymore. You're the army.
Exactly.
And the other side's the insurgents. You're wiping them out. So it's almost like they should have been the army and the former Imperial troops should have been the insurgents. I guess it's only because the Imperial forces were still so dangerous and so numerous that they can still consider themselves resistance. But at the same time, like, why? That's the other part of it. Like, Princess Leia remained with them and didn't become a political figure.
Yeah. Yeah, she's a general rather than working like her mother did in the Senate or whatever.
Yeah.
And it also struck me as weird that the First Order, which is basically the Empire Junior, they've gotten their act together. They just seem like they picked right up where there's no Emperor and there's no Darth Vader. But other than that, you wouldn't know that anything had changed.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is still polished and shiny and nice. See, it would have, I think, in some ways been more interesting if the good guys now were more polished and nice because they control most of the galaxy. And it had been the descendants of the Empire that were kind of the rough around the edges, cobbling together stuff, you know. Obviously it wouldn't have felt the same.
Well, or even the remnants of the Empire don't get along.
Yeah.
You know, if two fleet commanders meet each other, you know, none of them answer the Emperor anymore. Why should they cooperate? Why should one listen to the other one?
Almost,
you know,
like warlords rather than having, yes, a central authority. That would have been very interesting, I think. I guess they just wanted to go with what was the most familiar. But again, we lose a little bit of originality in order to get familiarity. And that's too bad. Well,
I was going to say, I did read the book that's out. That is the one. There's a book out now that's called Aftermath by Chuck Wendig or something like that. And it's an in-canon book, mm-hmm, after episode 6 and before this movie.
Okay.
But it doesn't give anything away, really.
What did you learn from it, though, that would help? Anything?
Well, I mean, there were some Imperial people that didn't get along. And there were some characters in it, but I don't know. I mean, I have to go. It's been a while. It was a couple months ago when I read it, but I don't know if anybody in this movie was in that book.
Yeah, but it doesn't give you any hint as to where the First Order came from, or
no, maybe Captain Phasma's in it, but that's it. I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, it's not entirely clear. It's a neat idea, and I like bringing the Empire back and everything, and having they've been out recruiting more, you know, British upper crust prep school officers corps guys, you know,
from the set of like they look like they should be on Game of Thrones and be Lannisters or something too. I don't know.
Or on Downton Abbey. It's like it's like the Empire lands on Downton Abbey and says, "All right, we need all of your gentlemen of the village to come on. Our officer training corps is now open. You have to know how to order around stormtroopers, fire giant lasers, and be choked to death by a Sith Lord. If you can handle those three things, you're good to go. And do it all with a very condescending accent, you know.
And run when it gets bad.
Yeah, and run, exactly. So that was kind of odd. I thought that the best moments in this movie were the ones that were the most original, that didn't seem to throw back. Like, one of my favorite moments was on board the smuggler ship when they accidentally release the two monsters,
mm-hmm,
and they start eating up the Scottish smuggler guy, mm-hmm, and the other guy. I mean,
yes,
you had like an Asian smuggler guy on one side and a Scottish, which was interesting to me. The Scots are smugglers and the English are the Empire, the Order, but and starts eating them. Now that was cool because that wasn't like anything we saw in the original trilogy.
No, it was very different.
That was pretty cool. That was pretty neat. And then, like, I also loved when we got to see the wreckage of the old ships on the desert planet.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of those scenes was in the trailer, and I thought it was the most powerful scene, you know, in that trailer. Yeah. Just because it evokes so much. It said, all that stuff that you remember from those movies is real. It happened, and here's what's left of it. It's all a bunch of wreckage on some desert planet.
Mm-hmm.
So that was, and then we got to see the ships fly through them, and that was pretty neat. You know, when we look back, probably the most important scene in the movie, which I wish I had realized at the time, and when I go see it again, I'll pay more attention, is the dream sequence of Rey.
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, I was.
When that happened, I was just like, okay, whatever, dream sequence, let's get on with the fun, you know. But looking back, there was a lot of stuff in that.
Mm-hmm. It was kind of like her, like when Luke has the vision on Dagobah.
Yeah.
You know, and Vader cuts his head off, or he cuts Vader's head off, but it's him. It was kind of like that, maybe. I don't know, but.
Yeah, that was what I thought, too. It kind of reminded me. It is another sequence kind of borrowed from the original trilogy, but. But I mean, in it, I think we get it wasn't clear whether everything we were seeing was stuff she had experienced before or it was stuff that was associated with that lightsaber, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not entirely sure. I mean, because what we're supposed to obviously infer is that she is maybe Luke's daughter.
Or the alternative theory that we have come up with is she was a youngling who was powerful in the Force, who had, you know, that Luke had found and, you know, were brought to the area to be trained with the other Jedi recruits, and then everybody started getting massacred. He, you know, hit her on that other planet or something.
Yeah. Yeah, and we don't get enough at the very end to be able know what his, he just kind of looks at her when she's holding the lightsaber out. So we don't get any kind of information. There's no data there to say he's like, oh, there's my daughter. Oh, there's that kid. Or, oh, there's,
oh, you got my lightsaber.
Yeah. Which, why would he leave that behind? But okay, fine. But yeah, I need to go back and watch that again and pay special attention, because I feel like there's information there that we don't have, that would help understand maybe a little bit. I don't know, though. Maybe not. Maybe it's just smoke and mirrors. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing about these, I thought that – wait, let me go back to – if we go back to like 1983 and we've seen Return of the Jedi, and you know that there's supposed to be 9 movies at that point. Tell me if this is what you always thought at all. I always thought, okay – wow, they've really set up 7, 8, and 9 to be a repeat of 4, 5, and 6, because you've got, you remember at the beginning of Star Wars, we had the young potential Jedi, and you had the older Jedi that's going to train him, and then you had the best star pilot in the galaxy and a cunning warrior, which is how Ben described Anakin, and now that's Han Solo. And so when I looked at all of that, I thought, okay, so Luke becomes Ben, and I thought Han Solo is going to become Darth Vader.
No.
But instead, it's his son.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't off by that much.
Well, but it's also, you think their children are going to be powerful in the Force, whether Luke or Leia's children, and
yeah. They're
going to be the next generation of Jedi and deal with the remnants of the Empire or whatever, so... That's where the story was always going to go.
Yeah, it's a generational family story, and they're going to be tempted just like Anakin was,
Mm-hmm. The other one of my favorite scenes in the entire movie is the scene where at the end they're going to attack the big planet with a gun on it, Star Killer or whatever, and they land, and Han asks Finn what his job was there, and he says sanitation, and he goes, how are you going to be able to turn the thing off? And he goes, I don't know. We'll use the Force or something. And Han goes, that's not how the Force works. I really enjoyed that part.
Yeah. Han got some great lines. Han and Chewie were like among the, I thought they were just going to be like a cameo, but they ended up being a major part of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I was surprised at how much the two of them ended up being, a major protagonist. This movie had a lot of protagonists, actually. It had a bunch. I like that David Edelstein in his review on NPR said this movie is brilliantly unoriginal. That's a good line,
It's good.
At the end, he was saying how for all that's wrong with the prequels, and I don't know if I mentioned this already, but for all that's wrong with the prequels, they at least tried to be original. They had a lot of limitations, obviously, and they had a lot of baggage, but they did try to do something different. And he says, this movie is obviously much more of a crowd pleaser, but he says it's too bad it couldn't be more original too. And at the end, he says it's kind of like with Ghostbusters. He says, why couldn't we have crossed our streams and had something that was both good and original at the same time? It's like it seems to be one or the other. And I think that's a legitimate criticism.
Sure. That's fair.
I pointed out that it's ironic that Disney made the not goofy Star Wars movie after we've had 4 movies in a row that had a lot of goofy in them. Return of the Jedi, honestly, there's a lot of great, great stuff in Return of the Jedi, but there's also a lot of goofy in it. You could see where the prequels were going to be going if you looked at, it's like when Return of the Jedi came out, we looked at it and we thought, dear Lord, please make the prequels more like the good stuff in this movie and not like the bad stuff in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny that Disney was able, because there really wasn't a lot of goofy stuff in this movie, was there?
Mm-mm. No, there wasn't. There wasn't any. There was very clearly and purposefully, not any Jar Jar, nope. Droid Army, 3PO. Level silliness.
Yeah, I've always said C-3PO is about as silly as I want my Star Wars to be.
Mm-hmm. And then 30 seconds of him standing between Han and Leia was plenty.
That was it. That was good. Why did he have a red arm?
We don't know.
Okay. Maybe they're going to have more 3PO type units, and we can tell it's him because of the red arm or something. that's usually why you do something like that in a movie, is so you can, just like when they put the blood on his face, on his helmet,
Finn's helmet.
So I just can't remember his name, so that you could tell it was him. Yeah. As soon as the guy put the blood on there, I'm like, okay, he's going to be important because we've marked him, you know, we'll visually know it's him. And that was neat. Yeah, let's see. We talked about Kylo Ren and the lightsaber. That was neat having a lightsaber battle. When you look at Kylo Ren as the major villain, you're like, dude, a former stormtrooper who quit because he's too much of a pacifist nearly kicked your butt at lightsaber fighting.
He's not a pacifist. He just doesn't want to be the guy that goes into the villages and murders everybody.
But you don't want to be the new Sith Lord guy and have a fight with somebody who's never picked up a lightsaber before, and he almost and Rey does take him down. So, you know, it took Luke 3 movies to be able to stay in the same room with Darth Vader in a lightsaber fight.
It's true.
And so Kylo's got a little work ahead of him, apparently, before he can really be an intimidating of a villain like that. But he's still an interesting character. Let's see. Do we get a holiday special Thanksgiving Star Wars?
Oh, good gosh, no.
I would love it.
They're never going to let them out of the movies again.
Oh, that would be so cool. I've got the VHS tape, and I'm thinking about showing it to my family tonight. Should I show it to them?
They'll be horrified. Come on.
Okay. All right. The last sort of critique I have is that it is kind of annoying a little bit that the big science fiction, fantasy, space opera type films of recent years have really been sort of nostalgia trips and remakes. I mean, you know, Prometheus was basically trying to go back and dig up Alien, and the two J.J. Abrams Star Trek movies were trying to jumpstart that franchise, and both of them had serious flaws where they tried to be something new, but they just didn't make a lot of sense. I mean, Prometheus and Star Trek Into Darkness both, those movies just don't make any sense at all. The plot is ridiculous, and there was a little bit of that here. It's probably the main problem I have with this movie is that it had that J.J. Abrams stuff doesn't always make sense, but it's neat. Did it bother you that way, or am I?
Sure. No, I mean, you have to. I think some of that you just got to roll with it in terms of the.
Yeah.
Like the Star Killer gun and draining their own sun to blow up these other planets on the other end of the galaxy, and how long does an energy take to get there, and why didn't the rebels know about it before and do something about it?
And if the First Order is just now getting its feet under it, trying to be like the Empire, how are they able to build something that big and powerful? I mean, that's just questions that are out there. A couple of notes. I did read that the dream sequence had the voice of Ben, and it was played by both Ewan McGregor and Alec Guinness. They both have voices in that. They actually have Alec Guinness saying Ray to Ray, and what they did was they found a scene where Alec Guinness in the original movie says afraid, and they cut Ray out of afraid. So you actually hear his voice, yeah. And then they actually got Ewan McGregor to come in for one day and record a couple of lines for that dream sequence. So you get both versions of Obi-Wan Kenobi in that little dream sequence. That's another reason I really want to go back and see it again and listen to that and pay really special attention to that dream sequence. A couple of other things is that apparently Abrams and Lawrence Kasdan, who helped write it, they said that they didn't want to go too deeply into her past in this movie. They suggested some stuff, but quote, this is a Kasdan quote, "We're hoping Rian Johnson can figure that out. We were really stymied." Now, he's sort of kidding, but Rian Johnson is going to be the director of the next one. Abrams only doing this one. And so it's going to be interesting to see a different – I'm kind of glad, right, that we'll get a different –
Sure.
Different take, a different vision on it maybe. So we'll see what I think that the next movie really is, like I said, going to be a lot about her past and learning a lot more about her. And it said they were quoted as saying they wanted to spread those revelations out over the three movies. And they point out that when you think about the original trilogy, you think about I Am Your Father and There Is Another. But Abrams points out neither of those things was in the original 1977 Star Wars. You don't learn them until later. And so that's pretty cool. So so I'm fine with that. So to kind of sum up our feelings about it, I don't think we need to drag it out too far, but should we give it a grade now? And tell me this, where do you rank it right now? You just saw it a few hours ago. I saw it a couple of days ago. I've had a little bit more time to think about it. Where do you rank it compared to the other six?
Well, I mean, I would gut reaction. I would say ahead of the prequels, but behind the original three.
That's exactly where I have it. That's exactly where I have it. Yeah. And that's tough too, because Return of the Jedi has enough in it that I don't like that. It's, you know, that I was kind of going back and forth on those two.
That's fair. And I mean, again, like it was a lot to absorb.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, we'll go back in 2 weeks and see it in a matinee and see it again and and I'll have a better sense at that point.
Yeah.
See all the stuff that I missed, but, that's my gut.
Yeah. I feel like Star Wars and Empire are just about perfect. There's not a lot bad about them.
Mm-mm.
And the prequels, the question for this movie was, would it be better than the prequels? And that's a pretty low bar to have to jump. And it did, which really put it in a competition with Return of the Jedi, because Return of the Jedi is generally considered the weakest of the original three. And so the question is, does the stuff that bothers you in The Force Awakens bother you more or less than the stuff in Return of the Jedi? And are the highs in Force Awakens higher than the highs in Return of the Jedi? And honestly, all the stuff with Luke and Vader and the Emperor is pretty high.
Yeah, I think the answer to that second one is clearly no.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's the thing, is like I didn't feel as high about them flying away from this thing as I did about blowing up the original Death Star.
Right. You know? No way.
So I think that's the other part, is the highs weren't as high in that sense, about the emotional high.
There were a lot of really good moments, and there's a lot of head scratching moments. But yeah, I think fourth is pretty much where I've got it, and I think that's where you got it. So, okay. Well, any last sort of thoughts that we haven't touched on about this movie and its place in the pantheon and specifics about it that jump out?
No, I mean, I think they did a lot of great things that, you know, and I really appreciated it. And there was a lot of great moments, and I really enjoyed that. I mean, there's also a lot of questions. Like, who was the old guy in the village at the beginning? You know, and I really liked those, the character, the little alien woman with the big glasses. I thought she was a really cool character, and I wish she'd have come with him. I hope she shows up in the other movies to kind of recreate the cantina scene a little bit of her place. And
yeah, they did.
So those kind of things I really liked, and Where do the bad guys go from here? You know, and then is Luke going to teach her? Is he going to train a bunch of Jedi? Is he going to refuse to have anything to do with them? And I think the other part is, Mark Hamill has done a bunch of voice work and other stuff now, so it's going to be weird hearing him be Luke again.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. I've been seeing him as the trickster on The Flash, which he really relishes that kind of role. You know, he played the Joker on the animated stuff, and he plays the trickster as an actual actor, you know. So that
He's
is kind
creepy.
Of interesting. Oh yeah, he does it very well. I guess in sum, I would say that there's just so much to this movie, and none of it exhilarated me the way the original Star Wars did. I never got that. I mean, because we've said last week, that movie to me is the perfect movie. It's just the perfect movie. And this one never really got to that level, but it made me happy. It made me feel like it was possible to not be disappointed by a Star Wars movie. The new characters are mostly great, and there's a lot of mystery about them still to wonder about, which is good, which is fun. The old characters, it was good to see again. The plot in this one was fairly weak, but it really wasn't the point. It just, they needed something to do while they were all running around, getting to know each other and running into each other and, you know, blowing up a planet, zapping whatever it was is okay. It's, you know, we can't really condemn this one for copying the first one about a giant planet killer if we don't condemn Return of the Jedi for doing the same thing. It's why Gary Kurtz quit, you know, the original is producing Jedi is because he's like, really, George, you want to do the Death Star again? And Lucas is like, yeah. And Kurtz is like, nah, then I quit. He did. I mean, you read his interviews. It's hilarious. Also, he originally wanted, there's some good stuff out there. They originally wanted like a very bittersweet kind of ambivalent ending to Return of the Jedi. And while they were making it, Lucas decided, no, I want a big happy ending. And Kurtz was like, nah, then I quit. So, you know, so there's a lot to like about it. There's a lot to kind of scratch your head. There's a lot to kind of go, it's a kind of a smorgasbord of a movie, isn't it?
It is.
But one thing's for sure, I got to see it again.
I do, absolutely. And like you said, the other big thing is, you know, for a Star Wars fan, the nostalgia factor was incredibly high. Every time an old character, even like when they showed inactive R2-D2 on the screen, people were clapping.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it had a lot of moments of people clapping.
Yes.
We did in our theater, yeah. I mean, you know, when the big characters come back or when something happens. It's funny. The moments when people applauded were very rarely plot moments.
You know, they were I want to see this person again moments.
Yeah, in most movies it's when something happens and you're like, "Yay, that happened. Woo, I was hoping that would happen." In this movie it was never that. Mm-hmm. I mean, when the Starkiller thing gets blown up, you're kind of like, "Yeah, whatever." It was a given.
Yeah, you knew it was going to happen.
But when you see R2-D2 wake up, then you're like, "Yay, R2-D2," you know, or when and we haven't even mentioned BB-8. What do you think about BB-8?
I thought he was cool. He was really good.
Another good new character, right?
He was. I enjoyed him. He wasn't a copycat R2-D2.
No.
So I enjoyed it from that perspective.
Well, what was funny about him to me was it was clear that they needed an R2-D2 type droid, but you couldn't use R2-D2 because there's way too much running around. It's like J.J. Abrams watched the first three movies and he said, and he probably was saying to himself, okay, the heroes are running from point A to point B to point C, and we always see them at point A, we see them at point B, we see them at point C, but we never really see them in transit because R2-D2 would be like way behind, right? It's like mm-hmm. they all go running, and R2-D2 is at the back of the line kind of going, and then they get to the next scene, and there he is.
Mm-hmm.
He's magically gotten there, right?
It's very true.
So with BB-8, we know he can go really fast. So
he could go on uneven terrain.
Yes. You needed a droid that could move fast on rough terrain, and that's exactly what he is. So he was kind of interesting. I like when he was zapping. Who was he zapping? He was mad at somebody and zapping him with electricity, and it kept doing it. That was funny.
Was it Finn?
Probably. He had some very good moments. So good old BB-8. He's maybe, after Finn, maybe my favorite new character in this trilogy so far.
He was good.
So what are you kind of hoping to see to wrap things up here? What are you hoping to see in the next one?
Good question. I want more Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want just two or whatever. I don't want just Rey or just Kylo Ren. I want some more. And I want to understand who the big bad guy is and what his motivations are, I guess. And I want to understand where Rey's from. And my son pointed out, we want bounty hunters.
Yeah, there you go.
I want to see some bounty hunters. I want to see some more scum and villainy in the galaxy.
That's right. Wasn't very much scum and villainy in the prequels.
No.
Everything was too clean and polished in the prequels because it was the Happy Republic.
That's right.
Yeah. This version of the Star Wars galaxy is a lot more interesting because it's the rundown, you know, after the Civil War, Reconstruction era kind of galactic empire. So, and if you haven't seen it, and for everybody out there, somebody's done a Ken Burns Civil War of the Galactic Empire Civil War. You've got to see that if you haven't seen it. Just go Google Ken Burns Galactic Civil War, Star Wars, whatever. It's about 4 minutes long. They do the Empire. So they do the Civil War with the Rebels and the Empire, just like it was Ken Burns. They even have scholars come on and comment on it. It's so it is so funny. It is. And they got the same. They got our Coach Snyder music playing in the background the whole way through it. It's great. You got to go see that.
I'll check it out.
All right. So I'm hoping that in the next one, let's put it this way. If the next one opens on a snow planet, I may get up and leave.
Come on.
Please. I mean, come on. It cannot open on Hoth or something that looks like Hoth. But other than that, and have any walkers.
I thought it was great that her house was a destroyed walker. I thought that was awesome.
That was really neat. Yeah. That was her house?
That was where she lived.
I didn't realize.
She lived inside the old walker.
That is great. I remember seeing one lie on its side, but I couldn't remember what its purpose was. So that's pretty cool. So I guess what I want in the next one is I want to see some explanation from Luke. I want to see Luke doing stuff. I want to see him training her, and I want to find out who she is. And I want to see how they use Finn and Poe Dameron in an ongoing story, because right now we don't even know if they've joined the Resistance or whatever. Well, he was – obviously Poe was
part of it. In it.
Yeah, but we don't know what Finn's going to do and how they're going to use BB-8 and all that. So there's just a lot of questions of what the story is after this. They're really – because there's really no story after this yet. We have to set it up, a whole new story, don't we?
That's what I'm saying. Like the whole I don't know where it's going thing. Yeah,
this is very much like after the end of Star Wars, where Empire had to reset everything. Okay, now they're on an ice planet. The Empire's chasing them. You know, Han Solo's trying to deal with Jabba the Hutt. They had to kind of reset everything at the beginning of Empire. So they're kind of back to that position now, aren't they? Except for with Rey off there with the equivalent of going to Yoda.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Luke, so. All right, so we've got something to look forward to in only 17 or 18 months. And
I thought it was in December of 2017.
Yeah, it's so. not even 2 years. Isn't that crazy? All right, well, let's wrap up then. I think that we give it a thumbs up.
Absolutely.
And
can't wait to see it again.
Can't wait. Absolutely. All right, so to take all of our criticism with a grain of salt, we wanted the perfect movie, and it's not a perfect movie, but it gives us a lot of what we wanted. And we're happy.
But as a fan, went and rolled around in the nostalgia, and it was great.
That was great. Okay, so the Rocket's going to get on out of here for another week. I hope you guys enjoyed this, and hope we didn't spoil anything for those that haven't seen it yet. Hopefully you heard my new spoiler warning at the beginning, so we will see you guys down the road. John, thanks so much for coming on again.
May the Force be with you.
And you.
Always.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.